The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement on Federal News Network. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy, trends, innovations, and debates. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Jason Miller. Jason is the executive editor for Federal News Network. Jason, great to see you. Welcome back to the show.
Roger, always a pleasure. You know, there's so much to talk about in acquisition, and I'm raring to go.
Well, we do have a long list of different things to touch on, and it's great to do these sort of quarterly catch-ups and get your perspective and. Also, it kind of turns into you interviewing me at some point. So that's always interesting. So, but first of all, let's talk about a couple things that are FAR related, namely the FAR. And that is, it turned 40 just about a week ago or so, April 1st, 1994. To commemorate that, I guess they're going to have a 40th subpart of the FAR focusing on cybersecurity and supply chain. Your thoughts?
What's interesting to me is that it's only 40 years old. I would expect it to have some sort of regulations, whether it's called the FAR or something else that's been around much, much longer. But secondly, I think it's an interesting way that the government acts and have all these rules written down. I think your column, Did We Go Too Far with the FAR, was a well-done, well-written piece. And you had some amazing statistics in it in terms of the number of new regulations, the number of pages, the complexity that the FAR has really grown over the last 40 years. And that's in some ways not surprising. Everything grows in complexity over time. But at the same time, this is why we're seeing this move towards other transaction agreements and commercial solutions offerings. And do we need to take that half a step back and ask, have we gone too far with the FAR? I'll borrow it from you. Do you have those stats handy? They're fascinating.
Well, I have some of the stats handy. I can tell you the most concerning stats, I guess, is the industrial base, and particularly small businesses, and the decrease in the number of small businesses doing business with the federal government for the federal government. Those stats look like for just about a decade. From FY 2011 to 2020, the number of small businesses receiving DoD contract awards decreased by 43%, despite those obligations increasing by 15%. In turn, the number of small businesses receiving contract awards fell on average by more than 7% annually over that same period, which kind of like the small businesses, more money is going to small businesses, and that's a good thing. But it's going to a smaller and smaller pool of contractors. What does that kind of indicate to me? I think it indicates that, the set-aside approach and that sort of thing does provide great opportunity for small businesses. The problem is it's so hard to break into the market these days because of all the regulations that and how much they have grown over time. I think it's created this, a significant barrier to entry for small businesses. And I think the commercial item, FAR Part 12 and the commercial item clauses is instructive of that.
Well, in your column, you wrote that in 1995, there were 28 FAR clauses that include the commercial item contract with only six clauses that were required. Today, there's some 90 FAR clauses that could be included in commercial item contracts, and more than 30 of those clauses are mandatory. So as you show there, the growth over the last 30 years is pretty incredible. In terms of flow downs, you even go further. In 1995, there were four clauses. Today, there's at least 22 clauses that need to be flown down. And I think the other piece of your column that was really fascinating to me was the agency-specific FAR supplements. You said there's 30 agency-specific FAR supplements. So not only do you as a contractor need to know the FAR, then if you're going to work at GSA or DoD or NASA or EPA or wherever, you got to know their own rules of rules. And I think that's to get to your point of the complexity has grown so much over the last 40 years. And really, if you want to say over the last 30 years.
Right. I mean, and then you can go even another layer down and that there's lots of, you know, I guess, management guidance, acquisition letters, that's what GSA uses, that provides further guidance on interpreting and implying all these various provisions, whether it's, you know, agency specific regulations or the federal acquisition regulation. I think, you know, the Section 809 panel report encapsulated, you know, they have a statement in their report that says since the Federal Acquisition Streamlining Act was implemented, that was 1994, and that where all these number clauses were reduced that you just, you know, just gave us the numbers, the number of DOD-related commercial buying provisions and clauses has increased by 188%. And the number of commercial clauses that may be flown down has increased fivefold. In 1995, the FAR and DFARS contained a combined total of 57 clauses applicable to commercial items. Today, there are 165 clauses, with 122 originating in statute, 20 originating in executive orders, and 23 originating in agency-level policies. So there's just a layering on, you know, I think the Federal Acquisition Streamlining Act was a huge, you know, paradigm shift in terms of trying to reduce regulation and focus on, you know, the fundamentals. And it just, it's like, it just, the machine, just kind of the bureaucracy and the, you know, oh, we've got to add this requirement, that requirement. And, you know, an OFPP actually statutorily has the ability to not, to make determinations that clauses don't apply, but that's almost, that's, it's rarely ever, if ever. I can't recall a time that it was used. I'm sure it was once or twice, but it's almost like it's a rubber stamp to apply all clauses, that it's in best interest of the government to apply this clause to a commercial item contract. It just seems like a rubber stamp, and that goes back, you know, three decades.
Roger, hold on. I got to bend down and grab something. Wait a minute. What am I pulling out? I'm pulling out my soapbox. Hold on. Let me put it down. Soapbox is down. Okay. Let me step on it. I'm getting on my soapbox, Roger. You know why OV does the rubber stamp? You know why the answer is. There's not an OPP administrator that has been Senate confirmed that's permanent. Don't get me started, Roger. I'm going to put the soapbox away. Okay. Let's go back to FAR Part 40, which is more exciting because you're right. This adds, and I think this in many ways is a good thing because they're not adding new requirements. They're saying, hey, we have all these different requirements all over the place. We're going to bring them together in one place because cybersecurity, because supply chain risk management has gotten such a big push and such so much attention. I think actually FAR Part 40 is a good thing, and I commend them on having the foresight to say, hey, we got to make this easier for people. Let's put it all in one section.
I would agree with you about that. I mean, it's a lesson learned from, you know, and I was in the government when we were trying to use all the various emergency authority, procurement authorities to support the response, to, in particular to Hurricane Katrina. And at that time, it was, you know, it was a maze going through the FAR to try to identify all the different regulations and the underlying statutes that would allow for emergency buying, you know, streamlined, urgent and compelling circumstances, all those things. And I think the lesson learned there was let's put it all in one place, which is what they did, I think, with FAR Part 18 is where they put it. And I think this is, carrying on a lesson learned, and it does make sense from an organizational perspective and just ease of use. And heaven knows the FAR needs some easing of its use, I guess. I don't know. So do you have any thought? I mean, you do have the increased use of OTAs as well and commercial solutions openings. GSA has that authority. I think DHS as well. I think that's right. And those I think will continue to grow in popularity, and people look to it as an alternative outside the current FAR framework.
And in fact, more agencies want that authority. We saw a bill on Capitol Hill just it's getting marked up the week of April 8th, where they want to give DHS that authority to have OTAs and commercial solution opening authority. I'm interested to see how much support that gets. I think this is a recognition that, you know, I think it's a Senate bill, some Better Enabling Secure and Trustworthy Technology for the Homeland Act is what it's called. And I think that that would be better for DHS. And I think it's something that they've been asking for. And I think other agencies would also want that ability to again, the same thing, to get these other abilities. What's your take, Roger, on industry? Do they like OTAs or is it great, something else we have to learn?
I think industry is positively disposed towards OTAs. It's a more streamlined approach. It's a not a FAR-based approach, although one of the things you do see as a trend is the FAR is what folks know. So they take some of that FAR language and utilize it in OTAs. But it is an area of growth. And I know companies, and particularly members of the coalition, that have had positive experiences with OTAs in terms of their ability to efficiently execute the agreement and then move forward on the important part, which is the performance. Let me ask you one last thing along these lines, or raise the last thing. And I think you mentioned this legislation. There's a significant piece of legislation I think has been incorporated in a couple of these acquisition reform bills, and that is language to essentially modernize the underlying multiple award schedule statutory authority and changing the language from basically lowest cost alternative type language to stating that the program is considered a competitive procedure if it's open to all sources and contracts result in the award best value products and services. Whereas the old language would say the award of contracts that result in the lowest cost alternative to meet the government's needs. And that lowest cost language has always been confusing. What does that mean? Is it total acquisition cost? Some would say it's low price, which is, a basic is a fundamentally anti-technology, anti-solutions type language. And so this would modernize it and would also provide, it would provide GSA the authority, the flexibility to modernize, the regulations underpinning the program. We talk about regulations again, to focus on commercial best practices, identify those. They could work on the pricing for cloud solutions in particular, and ensuring pricing better mirrors a commercial market rather than trying to, force a, commercial pricing into a non-commercial formulaic approach that doesn't allow agencies to achieve the best value for, overall. So there's huge potential in this language and creating additional efficiencies and effectiveness of the program, opening it up further to innovation and access to, cutting edge commercial solutions. So it's a big deal. It's very pro customer agency, very pro the government mission support. And I think it's holds a lot of promise for the GSA Schedules program.
You bring up a couple of really interesting points, Roger, that I think is worth talking about. The first one is this started as a legislative proposal from GSA. And I think, kudos to GSA and the supporters from the White House to get this in. They see the value of this. And I think it's probably been a bit of a area that they've stressed out about, where what do they mean by, lowest price or best price to the agencies? Because there's no way to define that. And I think, a lot of agencies have been really frustrating industry about this use of LPTA, lowest price technically acceptable. DISA over at DOD, for instance, keep saying we're going to not use it anymore. And then you see LPTA come up in procurements. So I think this would help GSA a little bit. I'm sure GSA has had the same problem, but I think too many times there's been is this really LPTA? And they're just calling it something else because price is really the main evaluation factor. So I think that is a really positive sign that Congress has seen this as a problem, understanding it's a problem, and then willing to do something about it. It's very similar to the Section 876 authority that very similar. Don't make price an evaluation factor at the main contract level. Wait to the task order level. And they're trying to fix that as well. So I think both things are steps in the direction that we've been waiting for.
Yeah. So, yeah. And you know what, Jason, we're up on the break, but when we come back, we can talk about, another GSA program that just crossed the finish line at the Commercial Platforms Initiative, just awarded 8 contracts in the follow-on procurement. That's a big deal. And GSA also actually just issued a cloud policy letter on addressing advance payments. Two big things with regard to GSA moving forward, and Of course, we'll touch on some other stuff as well. My guest today is Jason Miller. He's the executive editor of Federal News Network. I'm Roger Waldron. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Network. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Network. I'm Roger Waldron. My guest today is Jason Miller. He's the executive editor of Federal News Network. And we're, you know, catching up on procurement. You know, it's been a very busy first quarter of the year. And one of the things that did happen past quarter is GSA made its awards for the commercial platform initiative, the e-commerce initiative. And yeah, they awarded 8 contracts, which is up from the original, you know, I guess you'd call it a pilot, that was 4. And Jason, your reaction.
It's good to see this got across the finish line. Of course, Roger, I'm wondering if we're waiting on a protest still, because every big contract has to have a protest these days. GSA did some interesting things here. I think the first thing that stood out to me was that the 3 previous winners, Amazon Business, Fisher Scientific, and Overstock.com, obviously only 2 of them got awards this time around. I've been told from different sources that Overstock did not bid. They decided that this wasn't their cup of tea, if you will. So Amazon Business and Fisher Scientific are back in. And then GSA made the awards to 6 other other companies, and including several that are small businesses, which is a good sign that they believe small businesses can play in this market. If you remember years ago when they launched this, Roger, and you followed this very closely, they thought the market was something like $6 billion. They came back on that and said, no, it's more like $500 million. And now they're seeing growth, but a growth that's about $40 million a year, or about $80 million in 2022. So they're growing, they're getting there. And I think getting more players in there can drive more of that market toward this approach to commercial platforms. It gives GSA and the companies a better idea of where the money is going, then therefore gives agencies a better idea of where those small buys are happening. A couple statistics GSA put out there about the 2023 use of the commercial platforms was 34 agencies used them, $80 million. The average spend was, use was about $250 to $350. I was surprised it was that low. But again, they're supposed to be for under $10,000 buys, and they're supposed to be for those things you need a quick credit card or a quick item. So I think this is all positive signs that this is starting to gain some momentum, and will eventually, maybe still another year, 2 or 3, start getting those rewards that GSA expected, back when we started talking about this, Roger, in 2017.
Yeah, just the awardees, just to go down through them. So, as you mentioned, Amazon Business and Fisher Scientific, the 2 of the incumbents, did receive awards. And then e-procurement services, I believe small business, Grainger, Noble Supply and Logistics, Pacific Link, Social Glass, and Staples. And that is a really good mix of small and large businesses across that platform. And I think one of the things that, that will, spur growth in it is the fact that they do have now 8 contractors on the vehicle, right? I think, that it will lift all boats, and that they'll, it's like, there's a Starbucks on every corner. Well, why is that, right? Because I think this is going to help the program tremendously with regard to growth. And I think it also is a streamlined approach. And quite frankly, companies will look at this and look at this pool of, of e-commerce platforms. And when does it make sense for me to go through the platform versus having to deal with the GSA schedules as they're currently, sort of structured in terms of that issue, that contract negotiation level, and how that's being handled. So this will actually, I think, puts positive pressure as well on the schedules program to try to, continue the efforts to streamline that process as well. And I think there down the road, there may be additional opportunities to the extent, dollar thresholds get raised, whether it's the micro purchase threshold or the simplified acquisition threshold. Those 2 things could theoretically come into play, for the program down the road as well. So I think it is in a good position. I think it's going to be one of those things that sort of steadily grows. And then you're going to look up one day and say, wow, look how much is going through it. I think the other thing that would grow this program significantly would, assisting and providing the ability for agencies to get credit towards their small business goals for the purchases to go through these programs. I think that's been a challenge for the government, and I think it's a data challenge, and the question is whether they can solve that, because I think that will be a big spur as well.
Before we jump over to the other piece we want to talk about real quick, is the commercial platform initiative started off as this idea of giving Amazon more, if you will, of the market. That's the feeling, at least. It was called the Amazon Amendment by a lot of people in the market. And Amazon continues to win a large portion. Something like 96 to 98% of all dollars went to Amazon over the last few years. So I think expanding the marketplace is good, but GSA then now needs to, and the companies need to, market themselves a little stronger and get the word out that says, you know, we are here, we can help you, and it can, you know, help you with small business contracting, among other things. So I think there's some optimism, but we'll have to, it's always the wait and see, Roger, always the wait and see.
Yeah. The other thing, while we're talking about GSA, is the GSA's adopting of a, you know, policy to try to address, you know, the ability to do advanced payment under schedules for software as a service. And I just wanted to get your take on that.
This was a long time coming, and I think it's a very good thing. You know, this was, I think, the second acquisition letter regarding this idea of pay by the drink or consumption-based model for cloud services that GSA put out over the last few years. And I think what's important about this is this not just is about cloud, but really focuses on software as a service. And what we've seen around software as a service, specifically over the last few years, is this idea that more agencies are moving that direction. There's been a big push from the, you know, cloud security program known as FedRAMP to get more SaaS providers through the process. Even the FedRAMP update from OMB, the policy update, is really focused on getting more and making it easier for software as a service providers. So there's this whole increase of attention to SaaS, and I think GSA is kind of following the lead there to say, okay, how do we make it easier for agencies to pay? The second piece of this that I think is really important, Roger, is we've seen some examples over the last couple of years where agencies have tried to buy software as a service and they end up paying way too much money because of rules, you know, that they can't pay in arrears, that they have to pay everything up front. And I think that becomes painful too. So I think GSA is trying to really address the market in two ways. One, recognizing the future where that's going, and two, dealing with the past and some challenges that have stopped agencies from really becoming more modern from using commercial best practices to buy software.
Right. I think this is a very pro customer choice, customer value provision, and a pro competition, you know, policy guidance, because it enables the government to buy more like the commercial market does in many cases. So, you know, the more companies can offer their products or services consistent with the way they do their commercial model, the more efficient it is for them, the better value they'll be able to deliver at a, you know, even better price than they otherwise would. This increase, you know, the advanced payments issue that you have to pay in arrears, and that increases costs for industry and for the government, especially for the government in terms of those payment conditions, which are inconsistent with the way, you know, lots of companies go to the market in the commercial world. So it's a very customer, pro-customer type approach GSA is taking here, and they're to be commended for taking this step and moving forward on this policy. So we just have to see it implemented in different places like DOS and other contracts as well. So anyway, okay, Jason, we'll have to take our break. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about CMMC, maybe DOD. Paul's talking about potentially, you know, things taking longer, at least the big task order buys, and maybe what else we can think of in terms of what's going on out there when we get back. My guest today is Jason Miller. He's the executive editor of Federal News Network. I'm Roger Waldner. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Network. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Network. I'm Roger Waldner, and my guest today is Jason Miller. He's the executive editor of Federal News Network, and we're, you know, you're running through a bunch of different issues, you know, things that happened in the first quarter of the calendar year, and things we're tracking. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, everybody, it seems like, has been following for literally years, I would say, is CMMC and the proposed rule was put out last fall, and comments were due February 26. And I just want to get your impressions. I know you were you brought to my attention an SBA Office of Advocacy statement with regard to CMMC.
I think what the Office of Advocacy at SBA did was kind of bring together a lot of concerns, Roger, you and I have both been hearing over the course of the last 3-4 years about what does this mean to contractors, and specifically, what does this mean for small businesses? The Office of Advocacy letter doesn't really highlight anything that we haven't already been talking about or have heard before. But I think what the folks do over there is really important, which is they raise the concern to a level that any one small business couldn't do. And back in my day, Roger, when I was covering small business contracting all the time, when we first met, when you were a young lawyer in GSA, Major Clark, who is the deputy chief counsel, was always somebody who was, well, very thoughtful, very pragmatic about what he's looking for and trying to really explain the challenges. I remember working with him back in the day. And he lays out a couple concerns, clear and concise guidance for small business contractors and subcontractors. Things like clarity on the role of third-party assessment organizations to meet the demand for CMMC. So you don't have have and have not. A lot of large businesses get through, a lot of small businesses are waiting, and that hurts the ability for them to contract. And then for DOD to clarify some of the enforcement guidelines and mechanisms for how they're going to deal with enforcement, or whether or not your CMMC, if you meet the requirements or don't, or how close you become. And then, of course, to improve for DOD to really create some rules to encourage, to improve the small business participation in contracting programs. You quoted earlier in our conversation that the number of small businesses has really decreased across government, but more specifically in DOD. So I think this is just a smart letter that raises the concerns to a new level across DOD and really makes John Sherman, the CIO at DOD, to maybe take a half a step back and ask some of these questions of his folks to really try to be more clear of their answers as well.
Yeah, I think, in coalition submitted comments, which can be found on our website on CMMC, and, there's some similar themes in terms of highlighting the impact on small businesses and the cost associated with it. And, the whole external, assessment process and what that looks like, because it's another cost for small businesses to participate in the market. And, how are those small businesses do they have the resources to be able to do it? Do they have the expertise, and what are they going to do to obtain that? And, is it going to be prohibitive for them as a result of this framework to, participate in the market? And another big issue with regard to CMMC is, and it impacts small businesses, those who get, who provide like IT services supporting infrastructure or cloud services. And granted, there is FedRAMP and that could be part of it, but external service providers, and whether or not they have to be certified if Small Business X is going to, perform a DOD contract and they've outsourced their IT management, right? Which a lot of companies have done. How is that going to play, and how is DOD going to address that? And that could have that's a huge unknown and a huge impact on, the industrial base moving forward. And it's definitely an area that DOD needs to go back and clarify the treatment of external services providers versus cloud service and other cloud service providers. So a lot going on there.
It reminds me, actually, DOD just recently, I would say in February time frame, put out a memo trying to clarify some of the same challenges with FedRAMP. And what does it mean to get FedRAMP moderate versus IL impact level 5 or impact level 6? So I think they understand, or at least they're listening, that there is this, we have to make it easier on industry to understand what the requirements are. And we have to do our best not to have two different standards that are so far off each other that it causes, complaints and consternation. Because then, unfortunately, Roger, as you know quite well, then Congress gets involved and that never turns out well. If you have an amendment in the NDAA and then all of a sudden you're creating more complexity versus trying to improve the complexity or reduce it.
So, you know, it's interesting. So, you know, we started this conversation today about, you know, the cybersecurity part 40, and it makes sense to put things in one place as for ease of management, you know, both for government and industry. Well, you know, you have CMMC, you have individual agencies, you know, establishing their own cyber requirements as well. You know, CMMC applies to DOD. Civilian agencies may do something else. You know, just over the course of this winter, you know, in the winter 23 into 24 in the spring, we've had a number of requirements. There was a draft OMB FedRAMP memo that sought comments from the public. And as they go through modernization or, you know, basically upgrading FedRAMP, you had at least two FAR clauses, you know, one on incident reporting, one on sort of standardizing, you know, the cyber requirements out there. The incident reporting rules, significant rule, and significantly in some ways different than, like, for example, the DOD rule in terms of timeframes for reporting incidents and what is an incident, a cyber incident. Then you have software attestations coming, you know, from DHS and CISA in terms and what's required there. There's all these things being thrown at industry all over the place, you know, pursuant to, you know, the executive order, a lot of this underlying it, and perhaps, you know, some sort of central focus like the FAR Part 40 in terms of who do you go to, who do you deal with, how do you sort of, you know, make sure you're rationalizing this across the entire federal enterprise, I think would be helpful. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things about that is this idea that agencies and vendors, there's a recognition that they have to talk more, that they have to be in the same room. And I think one of the things we're seeing is by OMB going out with these policies, asking for comments, is they're trying to drive the right conversations. Now, whether that leads to the right policy is a different discussion. And I think that is always of concern because OMB on one hand or GSA or DOD is getting pulled in 10 different directions. You can't make everybody happy. So can they get to the point where they make people mostly happy versus people mostly unhappy? And I think we're going to see some of that with the, you mentioned FedRAMP memo, when that gets finalized. I think you'll see some of that with some of the CMMC changes that are coming. But the question always happens is, will they make too many people unhappy? And that will cause more challenges.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, there's lots of stakeholders, let's say. Okay.
That's the nice way to say it, of course.
Well, another thing I know you pointed out to me is this information report on DOD-wide pulp times. And the interesting sort of data point there is that, you know, pulp times for orders and contracts above $50 million has gone up from 2019. The pulp was averaged 185. In 2022 is up to 255 days. Whereas, you know, for transactions below $250,000 to less than $50 million, that stayed pretty steady and actually went down from 36 days in 2019 to 29 days in 2022. Why do you think this happened?
I'd like to blame protests, and that would have to force me to get out my other soapbox, Roger. So hold on, let me get out my other soapbox and get on it. I think what we're seeing is this push that price, and we talked about this earlier with Section 876, and the evaluation factors they're using and this approach of self-scoring. And again, this is DOD, so they're not necessarily always using self-scoring, but all these things are playing into this idea that leaves too much room to protest. And I think protests are good things. Roger, it's not that I'm against protests, but I think agencies have not figured out a way to get contracts out the door and protect themselves from the never-ending cycle of protests. What's interesting about this report, again, this comes from the Government Accountability Office, is they found the median DOD-wide award lead times actually have decreased by about 20%, about 32 days in 2022, down from 41 days in 2019. But again, DOD does tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of transactions every year. When you look at all their transactions, this could also mean, you know, buying, going to the Amazon the commercial platform that Amazon runs in buying paper, because you need a ream of paper or a box of paper. And that could literally take 2 hours or you know, 24 hours. And that helps bring that medium time down. The other thing, Roger, that I always find interesting that when we discuss procurement lead time is, how do you measure it? What is the actual idea of lead time? Is it from the time you have a need to the time you make the award? Or is it when you put the draft RFP out or the final RFP out? I think that also is unclear in the overall scheme of things. And we know former OPP Administrator Michael Wooten tried to define that and really tried to address that in some policy and memos.
Right. I agree that it's not well defined, or you could have multiple definitions. I think the point still remains the same. It's getting longer for the bigger awards. And I think you do make a good point that there aren't that many protests. Let's say there are more for the higher dollar, but still, even in that context, one could still argue the fear of protest works its way into the process, and becomes truly a process driven approach. Yeah, because it's surprising that includes orders. And there are a lot of very, very big orders done under multiple award IDIQ contracts. And the question is, like, you know, one of the things we always used to tell agencies when I was at GSA is, and it became case law, is that if you start applying all kinds of rules to yourself, you're going to be held to those rules. So if you are doing task order competitions were supposed to be streamlined, but if agencies start applying Part 15 to those task order competitions, you've got a whole set of rules there, and then you've got to make sure you're following all the rules, and did you have adequate discussions and all that sort of thing. So, perhaps part of it is getting away from, actually taking advantage of those streamlined procedures that were put in place. Well, Jason, we're up at the end of this segment. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about grants. I know that there's a new policy, reducing burden on the administration of federal financial assistance in terms of grants. Let's talk a little bit about that. And then maybe, finish up on just a couple, potential protest case if we have time. My guest today is Jason Miller. He's executive editor of Federal News Network. I'm Roger Waldron. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Network. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Network. I'm Roger Waldron. My guest today is Jason Miller. He's the executive editor of Federal News Network. And, Jason, I know one of the things that you've been tracking is the rewrite of the uniform grant rules. What is that? CFR 2 or 200, something like that. I don't know. All those regulations go in my head. So I know you have a couple takeaways from it. Please share.
Yeah, this is so important for so many reasons. And I think we all talk about procurement all the time and how exciting it is because you get to buy big things and small things and software and hardware and paper and pens and pencils. But there's more money that goes out through grants than there is through procurement. The Office of Management Budget said just recently $1.2 trillion, that's with a T, Roger, went out the door in 2023. So these rules are so much more important in many ways than a lot of the procurement we've been talking about, because both the size and the impact that it goes down across the state, local, tribal communities. And I think there's a much bigger focus from this administration and Congress now on where those grants are going and how they're being used. So people can read the new memo. It's only about 9 pages long. They actually have done a really nice job of putting it together. But the big deal about these, the changes to, again, you said to CFR 200, is they're trying to, one, reduce burden. Two, they're trying to require agencies to really write in plain language. And they're giving them a template for what they call the no photos, notice of funding opportunities. And this template really tries to simplify what it is. And what was interesting about this template, Roger, as well, is they actually piloted it at HHS with a limited number of users just to see how it would work. So I think those are all good signs of how they're trying to simplify, reduce the burden, make it easier, streamline the use of grants and grant making. And then the last piece that I'll just highlight from the changes, and again, people can read it on federalnewsnetwork.com, make it easy to do, is they are saying to grantees, people who accept the money, hey, you can use some of this money we're giving you to evaluate your project, to improve, to really use metrics to figure out how the impact we are having. Because I think there were some concerns about whether or not the rules or not would allow you to use money to say, hey, the money we got from the government, how's it being used? What impact it's having? And how can we report back to the government of that impact? And I think they're simplifying that and saying, yes, you can use the money. So again, a lot more there, but I think those are some of the really important highlights.
Yeah. And it, you know, this kind of sets the stage moving forward. You mentioned $1.2 trillion with a T spending. And now with, you know, as we go through working on the Infrastructure Act, investments, Inflation Reduction Act, those things, you know, more and more money from grants is going to commercial organizations to, you know, support infrastructure like broadband and that sort of thing. So this is, that you streamline it, make it easier to utilize. I think it's important to making sure you actually get, you know, the best bang for your buck out of that money as well. So I think that's a positive step in the right direction. And speaking of directions, Jason, like, let's look forward. Let's look, I guess, east or west or north or whatever it is. I don't know. I can't forget south. I got to cover everybody, right? So, looking in your cliff, what are you looking at in on the calendar moving forward for the rest of 2024?
There's so much going on. Obviously, we talked a lot about GSA. I'm looking forward to them kind of completing the Ascend blanket purchase agreement for cloud. There's Polaris. There's Oasis Plus. All those acquisitions are in process. So we are looking forward to seeing what comes from them. But you know what I'm most excited about, Roger, and all of this is it's a bunch of anniversaries here in 2024. 50 years of OFPP, who would have thunk, right? Where were you 50 years ago? Don't ask me that question, Roger. You'll be even more depressed. It's the 40th anniversary of the Competition and Contracting Act. It's the 30th anniversary of FASA and FARA, the Federal Acquisition Streamlining Act. So there's all these anniversaries that are happening, and I'm just looking forward to the cake. Hopefully, our friends Christine Harada at OFPP and Leslie Field and Matthew Blum will have a quality cake, and they'll invite us to celebrate with them. And give us a piece of cake.
Well, yeah. So where's the cake, right? So anyway, that's great. You know what? I'm looking forward to those anniversaries as well. It provides plenty of opportunity to take a look at, the Competition and Contracting Act, where it is today versus, the impact of the Federal Acquisition Streamlining Act. And you know, we already talked a lot about that on the show today, Jason. So I want to thank you for that. Again, I want to thank my guest, Jason Miller. He is the executive editor of Federal News Network. I'm Roger Waldron, and you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Network.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement on Federal News Network. Tune in Tuesday mornings at 11 or subscribe to this show on iTunes or Podcast One.